Ted didn't give me the meat cleaver, so I don't have gavel. But I want to welcome everybody to the March Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board meeting. And as you come in, if you could sign in, if you haven't already, up there so we know who's here. And then we'll get started. We have a pretty packed agenda, but the first thing is the most important thing, which is community input. So, other than what you see on the agenda, if anybody has anything they want to share with the board at this time, please do.
The Wednesday, March 7th, 2018 board meeting.
And most of our stuff needs concurrence still as far as the bills. But we only have one page that's still alive of bills, which is very nice. And here is the budget, and I just wanted to share that.
Is there anything in particular that you're anxious about?
No.
That we should be happy about?
Tomorrow's the last day of the session. I'm very excited about that.
I mean, that's it. Yes, I understand. I can read in between lines. Anybody else have anything for the board tonight? Okay. Well, we're honored to have three distinct and distinguished guests here tonight, and we'll start first with Tisha. Tisha is with the Washoe State Rehabilitation Council. She's the executive director, and she's going to share with us first.
Well, thank you very much for allowing me to come and speak tonight. I do have some handouts I'd like to give out. Tonight, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was more about the public workforce development system. So many of us, when we think about the public workforce development system, it's more like the workforce, or American job centers, they're sometimes called. So myself in my professional capacity, and also honestly personal capacity, is that I'm an advocate for individuals with disabilities, specifically individuals with disabilities and working. That's my passion, that is my love. The part of my job is interacting with the public workforce development system. And about a year and a half ago, I was named co-chair to this state level advisory committee to the State Workforce Board. And this particular advisory board is all about looking at the public workforce development system and saying, how well are you serving people with barriers to employment? And look, it actually has 14 different populations that are called out. In your handout there, it kind of outlines, I think the second page, talks about the 14 different populations that were called out, that in the past haven't always been well served by the public workforce development system. You're going to notice on there that one of the populations is individuals with disabilities. So this state level committee, what we do is we are made up of a bunch of agency heads, and it's looking at pulling resources together to be able to fund and fix solutions that are identified at the local level. So I think actually talking about the local level is the most important thing to talk about here tonight. So about a year and a half ago, or maybe it was 2 years ago already, when this state level advisory committee to look at barrier accesses into the public workforce development system was created, they also created at each of the different local 12 different places across the state, the different workforce development councils also had to say, hey, you at the local level, you need to create an advisory committee that is made up of primarily people with lived experiences from these 14 different populations, or service people who provide services to those folks. And they are supposed to advise in their local area, like what's working well for them and what's not working well. So here in the Southwest Workforce Development area, they have a local advisory council. And I'm going to let Kevin talk a little bit more about that, but I'm going to give you just kind of a tidbit of the power of those local advisory councils. One of the things that I think, unfortunately, we do know is that sometimes people with significant disabilities are turned away when they go try to get employment services at work sources, or they're told, hey, you're supposed to go get services through the Division of Voc Rehab. And they absolutely can, and many times that is a good option, but the truth of the matter is they can get services at whatever part of the system they want to. So the question is, at these different local advisory committees across the state, I had the awesome opportunity to visit most of them and just to talk to them and say, how is it going? Where do you need support? What are you experiencing? And one of the things that we have absolutely seen is all of those local advisory committees are open to the public, and it typically is the folks who show up at those, particularly those different populations, that get their needs met. So a great example of this is in Spokane. I visited one of their local advisory committees, and their local advisory committee is honestly being run and kind of got taken over by this group of awesome advocates that all have physical disabilities. And because they have physical disabilities, they have like owned this committee, and they have been extremely involved with actually like the actual remodel of their workforce center to make sure that it truly is accessible to all people. So I guess what I'm just here to talk about is a little bit about nothing that you guys don't already know, and the importance of when you show up, if you really, you know, speak for a certain population, it's typically that those needs that get heard. And now I'm going to turn it, and one other thing, if you have any questions about the State Level Barrier and Access Solutions Committee, I have a handout in there that has four names on it. My name is on there, but I'm actually only going to be in that role for about another 2 days.
So, 2 days?
2 days, yeah. And then I'm transitioning over into a different position, so I'd love to answer any of your questions for the next couple of days. But in the future, actually, Mark Adrian is probably the best person to contact on that list if you have questions.
USB?
Yes. Department of Services and Compliance.
Does the board have any questions they'd like to direct toward Tisha and her short tenure?
2 days, folks.
Yeah.
I probably answered your questions. I know, right? It's really hard on
you guys have a website, right?
We do. So the best place to find information about this is to go to the State Workforce Board's website. And we have a page on there that shows kind of every month the State Level Barrier and Access Solutions Committee. We have monthly meetings, so it has all of our information from there.
Now, where is the physical location that a person would go to for the workforce center?
I am now going to pass it over.
Yeah. So Kevin Burke, thank you for inviting me, Mary, and to speak a little bit about the local implementation of the workforce system. So as Tisha was saying, there are 12 of us across the state. Many of you may interact or know about them through some of your work. We have two locations, one here in Vancouver off of Mill Plain, and we have another one in Kelso. So one is a full site, the one here in Vancouver, and the one in Kelso, a little bit smaller, an affiliated site of ours. But and that's WorkSource. WorkSource is not an entity, it's not an organization, it's not a business. It is a collaboration of partners, which is managed and led by the local workforce investment board here, that Workforce Southwest Washington organization. We are, on one hand, a funding agency, so we are stewards of about $10 to $15 million of largely federal resources that we invest across a three-county region here in Southwest Washington, Clark, Cowlitz, and Wakayama counties. And on another hand, we're a convener, so bringing partners together, much in a conversation like you're having here today, and also support and advocate for public policy up through committees that Tisha sits on, through the State Workforce Board, and to the legislature and beyond. So we do a little bit of everything in this space. As it pertains to this, I've been with the organization for about 9 months now as its adult initiatives manager, leading the adult portfolio investment that we make in this region. We have undertaken a series of things that, to rethink how we're delivering services, partly in response to the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, which passed a few years ago, that gave us some more innovation opportunity in how we deliver services. So we started with, and Bianca has been an integral part of this as well locally, a strategic plan session that included all of our partners under that group. Department of Services for the Line, DBR, SHS, ESD, well, I'm sorry I'm using a lot of acronyms here, but Department of Social and Human Services, Employment Security Department, which is our main partner on the providing wagon advisor and sort of back to work services through the work source, and a host of other sort of community college and other partners thinking about how do we improve our service to these 14 populations. So we have a community workforce partnership committee that is, we've integrated our VASC work inside of that committee. We just had our meetings are also up on our website, and I can send those around as well. Because I would say that I'm here asking for your help in this conversation, as Tisha articulated very well, those who show up. Not that we do not take input and do a lot of research and working with our partners, but it is a committee, it is a board, a lot of decisions get made, and where we put our time and resources and thinking about how do we solve some of these problems, we take bites of different apples at different times. So the most recent one, because we have some funding that's going away, is looking at how do we continue to serve people who are re-entering the workforce that have been justice involved at some point.
Another one of the populations.
Right. So I can sort of stop there. The packets that I've included with you or for you in front of you have a whole host of resources about all sorts of things that we do. I will say that I come from Pennsylvania, where the good news here is it's a much more integrated system. I will say that all the partners that we do work very well together, as opposed to my good friends in Pennsylvania, so we got that going. And the fact that this is being discussed and that we're invited here to this group speaks to the importance of this, and so I think that's another big plus for the local region. Maybe I'll stop there and take any further questions, because I could go on about the workforce development system.
Well, let me kind of follow up a little bit. Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned was getting people more involved.
Yes.
In that. How would you recommend that they become involved?
Yeah.
Would you like a mass rally at the board meeting?
Yeah.
You know, pitchforks, kerosene.
Yeah. I would say that the first place to start would be through our CWP meetings. We can get people on the agenda. We can focus on a specific topic. Actually, working with Bianca would be a great resource as well, because she's a part of that. She's part of our board representation. I should say, too, that the Workforce Development Board itself, which there's a one page in there that sort of outlines who's on that board and who the partners are, is mandated by law as to who sits on that board. So we do have a wide swath of partners across education, across different public and human social service agencies, departments at the state level, business led. So part of the workforce development shift and we've talked a lot about this at the local level is, we've done, the workforce development system has focused, and rightfully so, on preparing people for the world of work over the past, well, since way back then. I'm not going to try to say what CETA stood for, GPA, but way back when, 15, 20 years ago, the push at the federal level over the last 5 or 6 years since we all was really, all right, well, let's not forget that we're doing this great preparation. There's got to be some connection to the private market in terms of where does employment exist. And so part of our job is thinking about this system over the last 5 years and moving forward is, okay, well, we need, there's an education component to our employer community to understand, well, there's especially with regards to this conversation, a lot of people that are ready and willing and able to work don't look the other way for some God unknown reason. And so we try to play a role in that and bringing business partners together with our state level partners to have those conversations as well, to sort of break down some of the barriers on the employment side to say, like, I don't know why you're turning the other way on some of this. And that happens across all those 14 populations, mind you. So I would say, long-winded way of saying, there's the first place to start, I would encourage you to identify or those who would want to attend some of our community workforce partnership meetings where we talk about how do we design or think differently about service, bring some lived experience. I mean, the more that we can hear that, and the more that we can advocate the portal for thinking about different streams of funding. We know the role that we play, too, is going after resources that bring to the community. And we have some really good partnerships in that. We have a great partnership with DVR, and maybe the uncle mentioned a little bit about that, may not. We have great partnerships with our friends across the river as well, and looking at attracting larger federal resources to the community. So there's a whole host of different roles we can play to support some of the work that you guys are thinking about too. So, yeah, go ahead.
Does any of the board have questions? Or yes?
So can I just throw something in there really quick? I think when you talked about, if you are thinking about how you can really move the needle for employment when it comes to individuals with intellectual developmental disabilities, making strong connections with members of their board is going to be huge. At each of the boards, DVR has a different seat on those boards. I think that would be great. Or if you have strong connections with any of the other members, I think that would be a wonderful way to make sure that you have a strong relationship with them and that they know about the needs of the people that you're serving.
Now, I'm assuming that you have some data regarding the amount of people from the different targeted groups that you serve. Who is the, of the 14 areas that you were referencing, I got so many papers. No, that's all right. It's a good thing. It's a very good thing. What are the groups that seem to garner the most amount of assistance at this time?
Well, I can tell you that we don't have a good answer to that question. Partly that's a data resource issue at the state level, which the state is actively looking at fixing. It's awfully frustrating that I can't tell you. But I know that we've had special funds that have gone into, say, reentry work. That has just been something that was an investment made at a federal level focused on our population. So that's not to say that that's to the exclusivity of that some other group, the exclusivity of some other group. We just can't report on that anymore. And that's a frustrating technology problem I discovered when I got here. But it's a great question. It's one that our board asks us all the time.
Well, how many staff do you have at the center that focus on assisting individuals?
I would ask Bianca. Maybe it has a better one on it locally, but it's a lot.
I'm not just talking DDR.
Okay.
Talking about the entire. I used to work for the Private Industry Council.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Great.
Development was something I did in a previous life, so not completely ignorant about it.
So both our local office, the work source, everybody that's connected.
Mm-hmm.
I like his technical term a lot.
Yeah, I'd say it's less than 100, not more than 50.
Yeah.
And that's across all departments. I mean, especially here in Vancouver. And those aren't our staff, that's shared staff across, you know, all the different agencies.
Specifically for DVR, it would be 13.
Okay, so DVR has 13 individuals that focus their energy on people with disabilities. Does that include intellectual disabilities and developmental disabilities?
Absolutely. Yes.
Because at one point in time it didn't. Yeah. Well, 20 years ago.
That might have happened, but that was never so.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not doubting that it didn't happen, but it wasn't supposed to.
And so what array of services do you provide to individuals that come in, and do they need to be determined eligible under the federal 125% of poverty level type of thing? Nope.
So it depends on who you're what you're asking, so I'm just going to clarify what you're asking. I would say that if you're now talking about the Division of Voc Rehab.
No, I'm talking about.
So in the WorkSource, and jump in, so if I'm wrong with any of these things, but there's many, many different funding streams and many different programs. So when I think about the WorkSource system, I actually kind of think of like a pot spaghetti noodles, like just a whole big, like, mess of funding streams. Which there's some beauty to that, there's also some chaos to that. But all of these different programs have different eligibility requirements. Mm-hmm. And off the top of my head, are there certain ones that have income guidelines?
There are.
Yes, yeah. That's my thought.
Yeah, absolutely. So it varies, but by and large, if you were to come in with a barrier to work, you're going to receive some work.
So there's basic services that anybody can receive. If you're starting to get into what's more called like case managed services, more intensive services, then there might be more eligibility requirements.
So what would you offer someone who has an intellectual developmental disability and has a job? What can you do for them?
So I will turn that to Bianca.
So I know what Bianca can do. I want to know what you can do.
Yes. Well, so WorkSource can provide a whole array of services. I mean, it depends on an individual. It could be that they may need additional support services, maybe they need help with a resume, maybe they need help with identifying specific jobs, or they already identified something they want to go after. Maybe they, it's a case managed approach, and it's individualized, right? So there isn't necessarily a blanket, like, this is exactly what we're going to do for you.
Yeah, so that, I'm an older individual. I lost my job today. I need to get a new job, and I don't know where to go, where do I walk to you to find your help?
So, yeah, that's perfect. You can come straight to our office down on Mill Plain. You can visit us online at either through our website or through the WorkSource's website. The first thing you would get is a conversation with a frontline staff that would ask you explain your current situation, and they would go from there to case manage what might best fit with you. You might already have a resume, may or may not. You could explain your past work experience. They maybe will identify a job for you or a couple jobs for you right away to apply for.
Okay, so you can do all that stuff.
That's correct.
Now, what if he doesn't have the skills, which makes sense. He's an academic, so he really doesn't have any practical skills. What would you do for this poor elderly gentleman?
So there's also a host of training resources. So say you came in and said you were an academic in a college setting, perhaps, and you said, you know, I've heard a lot about manufacturing. I really like a manufacturing career. Well, great. We have, you know, five or six employer partners that are looking for people with potentially 6 out of 10 skills that you have. To get them on another 4, here's a series of resources we can help train you at a college in Clark, maybe a private training provider that's identified by that employer. Maybe you want to get into an apprenticeship program. I mean, there's a whole host of resources that we have available, but it would be a conversation that we tailor based on what you tell us.
But I don't have to have any previous, I just have to have a social security number or something like that. And that's
correct.
You just have to be eligible for
right. That's right.
And let's say that you, that one of the WorkSource staff members is working with them for whatever services that are going to be provided through observation. Maybe you've got some anxiety, maybe there's some depression because you've been without a job. We have a DDR counselor that is now housed, and I was going to briefly talk about that with my update. It's housed at the WorkSource, so they're there for that support staff in our partnership with WorkSource to have that professional and that expertise in disabilities. So if someone does come in, they're going to have that support. Maybe they don't need to come through DDR, they don't want to, they have that choice. We still can provide that information for them and that support and whatever need that they might be, you know, whatever that might be.
And also just some technical assistance to the rest of the people who work at a WorkSource. So they might say, hey, Bianca, you're supposed to be an expert on individuals with disabilities. I got this person on my caseload. They don't want to apply for services with DVR, but I'm just not sure exactly how to handle this. Then Bianca or her staff could then help, hopefully kind of give some coaching or guidance to that person to help them.
Where it makes it a little tricky, and we actually recently had this concern, was an individual that didn't want to go through DVR. They had already gone through before, and there was noncompliance. So, and so we can't disclose that information. information, because that's confidential. We have good, valuable information that we probably, we benefit to that staff, but we're not able to share it because of that piece. Now, if he goes through back through DVR and he wants to sign something, but we can't even say that that was a former DVR client, so that was a bit of a challenge that, then those are going to pop up. The Toppy being in the position of at WorkSource, we're discovering some of those things, so how do we address that? And it would just be that messaging that you know, what is WorkSource's normal process? If they have somebody that there's a disturbance, what would they normally do, regardless if they have a disability or not? Or it might be, maybe not, we're generalizing the conversation of how to message that to that customer, so it really looks like you need individual services. This is what we've observed. These are not just DVR, but these are potential places that we might be able to get that very specific individualized service. It's really needed. But again, it's obvious that for that support at whichever path that is, if we're able to talk and have those consents and have that in place, or if we're not, and we can discuss it, just in general support, then we can help that as well.
I just wonder, how similar are the services? So if someone qualified for DVR, I'm assuming then they couldn't access DVR services and then also access, or
sure.
They could do both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
All right. Yeah. So there must be some services that are dissimilar, that
totally.
That are, so what are the differences then for someone who experiences developmental disabilities who's using DVR, then what services then could supplement that DVR doesn't do?
So with DVR, we have community resource programs, CRPs, that can work with them on an individual basis. If they need a CARF position, if it's not CARF, but they can work with them through community-based assessments, getting a snapshot of their ability, are they job ready? Then we would go into job placement services, where we would provide assistance with and it looks different where, you know, a lot of the WorkSource customers that come in, they can independently do a lot of those things, right? Where some of those that are connected that need long-term supports or with DD, they need somebody to assist them with that, to actually fill that out, to go in and network for those positions or see where positions are available. And so those community resource, or those community, those CRPs can go in and do that. They also provide important and intensive training. So we got the job, we found it, let's get them stable on that job for 90 days. And then even after that, we provide retention services from our VRC. So for 6 months, they have that support. DVR is eyes on it. And we need more time. If we haven't had job stability by then, it's not that 90 days we cut you off, you're stable or not. You know, we allow whatever time is needed. And then from there, then the long-term supports pick up smoothly for that process.
So do you provide supportive services in the form of assistance with clothing so that a person could have an interview and look professional?
Absolutely. So okay. if there's an identified need for the service, then certainly we can provide that as cold maintenance for our customers. So if the counselor has identified, oftentimes we'll come in and have them, if they may have worked with the CRP with a mock interview, come in and present yourself for that interview. And if they come in and their clothes, they have holes in them, or they're not presenting well, or they would not present well for that interview, then certainly we can provide clothing for that need. We can even provide for when they have the job, there may be specific jeans or pants or work boots, and steel-toe work boots are pretty expensive. So if there's a specific need for them to work clothing, we can also purchase that as well. So while they're in job placement and also while...
How do you coordinate with some of the local supported employment programs and some of the private for-profit programs that provide services through Clark County to assist people in getting jobs? What do you see your role and also WorkSource role in supporting them as they're working with people with intellectual disabilities?
I think we have a great partnership, not only with the CRPs that are connected to the long-term supports, but when we initially, we get customers in different areas. So sometimes the CRPs are already connected to those county hours, and they have worked with the John Hudson because it takes a long time, and they may approach us with a need for intensive training because they have a job. So we still have to honor the process of DDR. They still have to go through eligible. They still would have to go through an assessment period, and we still have to get them in the plan. The barriers to their the barriers to their disability still have to reflect the services that we're providing so that we can justify all of that. But we can do that, and it sounds like it's going to take a long time, but there are best practices that we have in place. If somebody comes in and just needs support and intensive training because they found a job, and we, if it's medical documentation that we need to support eligibility, then we'll have that conversation beforehand. Hey, bring that in. So instead of 60 days to eligibility, we might be a week. Because we fed that information to us, so we can expedite that those services possibly. But in addition to that, it's working with them to, again, the job placement. We have contracts that we have in place for the different service areas, the different phases of DVR. If it's assessment, if it's job placement, or if it's to maintain employment.
So typically a person with a developmental disability is, if they're receiving service, they're going to have a group of providers around them, or people, and they're going to have an open case with DDR, and they're going to have an open case, or however you guys call it, that you're also under your service, receiving services through Clark County.
And oftentimes there's interaction with, determining the long-term supports. So how many hours are they going to get? And we'll have. What is that going to? Is it going to impact their benefits? Because the majority of them are on SSI or SSDI. So that opens up a conversation of part-time versus full-time and how it's going to impact. And so we have those conversations sometimes with the case managers with DD, or if there's any information, if we get documentation, there's a lot of assessments that are completed that are very beneficial for us when we're doing eligibility determination, or even within the assessment to develop the plan for employment. So,
not a related question. Is the job market better these days?
Depends on for who. That's what I would say. For some, yes. For others, no.
Did you say in general it's better?
Yeah. But I'd say
like more people.
Yeah, I'd say in the major sectors in our local economy, healthcare, construction, technology, manufacturing seems to be up, and there's open positions, and we have employers telling us all the time we can't find the right people, etc. We often ask who those right people are.
Can they describe that?
Sometimes, yeah. And so but we do spend a lot of time here sort of peeling that onion back a little bit and understanding where we can help connect. And part of what one of the big values of the public workforce system is trying to create and invest in an extremely talented pool of individuals, right? And to market that as the preferred source, and it should be. We have over 5,000 people hit the system in the 3-county region here every quarter. 5,000 people in a pool that we know we can physically sort of reach out to. That is potentially vetted, that has had some services provided, that we know it's a incredibly valuable resource. And we sort of beat that drum a little bit and say, well, we have people, so what's the and we do have some success in matching, and there are, employer partners who are engaged in different ways that make some of that successful. So,
do you have to have a Washington driver's license?
And come from Portland?
Oh.
No.
Are you trying to throw us off?
No, I was just wondering if they're moving to Washington, but it takes takes a while for them to get all the paperwork. After they'd be watching them.
No, for the division of Oak Rehab, you do not have to be a Washington resident.
No, you just have to have two forms of identification prior to making eligibility to determination.
You just have to be
able to work.
Yeah.
Prove that you're able to work.
I still don't think I've got my question answered.
Sorry.
No, and don't cut me off. And so if it takes too long or you just don't have the answer right now, just let me know. I'll be fine. I know what DVR does. I know those phases, if you will. And my question was, someone who qualifies for services, who's going through DVR, what else can workforce add that's not going on in DVR? Or how does someone access both? Why would they want to do the phases of DVR? And then what could they get from workforce at the same time? What's different about them is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest bucket that's different is we have training resources. Right? So if somebody's gone through a program in DVR, they're eligible, they're ready for work, as Bianca said, there would be a handoff with a case manager or with a business service rep, let's say, that's already gone out, think job developer, right? We've identified six companies. They have positions that, you know, line up pretty closely with the person that DVR might refer. Maybe there's some on-the-job training that we can provide, which is in large part a wage offset for the first few weeks. And that's what we could bring to the table. That's what WorkSource would bring to the table, part of the investment that WSW would provide, right, with federal funds. So that's probably the most clear, distinct difference. And then there's a whole host of sort of specialty resources, like I was saying, apprenticeships. There's apprenticeship programs which we invest in. There are cohort-style training development that we do with specific employers. A whole host of things. So what we talk a lot about with DVR is how do we bring employer partners to the table. Part of that is the education piece, which I mentioned earlier. The other part of that is let's bring some open jobs to the table that you said you've got folks that are ready, willing, and able, and just we're trying to identify and do some job matching, and we bring that to the paper as well. So we invest in this collaborative team that goes out and basically does.
So people come to you. Do you go to people like you? You go to our schools. Do you high school?
Yep. I'd say under WIOA, our role has shifted. In the past, we did a lot of in-school investment too. We had a lot of community-based partners that would do some in-school work. Now it's a lot of kids who are transitioning, young adults who have either dropped out, we call out school youth for opportunity. Young adults are looking for direction. So we still engage in the school districts in promoting careers and talking about resources that we can help get in certain fields. The investment piece tends to go to those who are struggling and haven't landed somewhere. So, and I think that's probably appropriate.
What degree?
Can I try to answer your question? So the WorkSource is funded for anybody who wants to just walk in the doors and get just general help with finding and getting a job, and there's all sorts of different resources. Every state also has a VR program. That VR program is part of this larger public workforce development system. They provide pretty much all the same services as available to the general population, except that they are targeted to a certain population. DVR can only serve individuals with disabilities who are interested in going to work. So they have a niche market. So, yes, it's exactly.
It's like an IEP and a 504. You can have a 504, and it can be part of an IEP, or you can have a 504 on your own.
So things are working really well for that person, and they're getting all of their needs met through their DVR. There might never have a need for them to receive services at a WorkSource. But it sure is nice to know that they've got options if they want to. And I would say that I do think that one of the really big strengths with the Workforce Development Council or the WorkSources is they have got really, really, really strong connections to businesses. They've got really, really strong connections to businesses.
Oh.
And you know what? That's a really important making sure that people get employed, and that somebody has an employee. So you've got wonderful connections to this. You bring businesses to the table, you've got strong connections with them. I think that's a huge part of what they bring to the
So, as a business, how would I get connected to you?
My card is, or Jeannie's card is in, that's good to do, but you can connect directly with us, and I can connect you to our business. We have a business services lead. It's actually a consortium of partners that include the chambers, the Economic Development Council, the Employment and Security Department, and a group of folks that we fund, but I can give you your card.
Any other questions from the audience? Please.
So I understand DVR niche is isn't there an eligibility for there's a waitlist but if there's certain eligibility they don't so if they're not on the waitlist would that be second would that be an option?
Information referral on where they can go aside from the New York so they have to be most significant. So they have to meet four of the seven functional limitations losses to
Yeah, I would say in that. So think of WorkSource as a mall, right? A mall of support. Like the goal there, and it's not often delivering the best. It's not often. Well, so the theory behind it is we have a one stop where somebody can walk in off the street. It wouldn't matter what the situation was. And our job, WorkSource's job, I should say, and us being one of the funding agencies or partners there, is to find that person help, right? Is to either refer that person somewhere, connect them to the right agency that might live inside of WorkSource, or we can refer them to somebody else. And if they're looking for a job, well, we've got a resource room, we've got coaches, we've got jobs ready to go. So it's a one stop, right? It's meant that if you were to walk in, or even connect online, it's a great sort of first place to start.
Yes, please.
I'm just wondering because we are kind of a CRP, so we would be working with somebody that has a disability, doing training and the ongoing support of someone who's doing it. And so, but I'm not interested in this one, how about really, really sharp and good employer context that you have is how do we make sure that you understand what we're doing with people with more significant disabilities who may need behavioral supports, communication supports, and how do we tap into that so that you're aware that we have also a labor pool that's missed.
So let's connect. I don't know the exact answer to that, how it works right now.
Let me help you work on it.
Yes, that would be great.
Oh, no, and the other thing is we have a business specialist on our office. She's amazing. She networks with so many of companies and agencies out there, and it's really delivering that message of how accommodations would work to make it not such a scary thing to hire bringing that message of being responsible for that to how to connect the two. So if there's a company that you guys want to for us to go, because we don't want everybody.
Right.
10 people going to an employer and trying to discuss persons with individual disability or DVR or have you, but we can definitely come in something that we can connect with and have Darlene do that. She's part of that support and partnership with DVR.
What was her name?
She's a business specialist.
What is that? what is she connected with?
She helps network for businesses just to address.
So she's kind of like go in between some therapies and creating the business.
She does assist with some of these here for to help with resumes, to help with salaries, to do some soft skills. She does do that. These are pretty significantly fairly independent amount of for the CEO. But she engages businesses for all of our customers, not just those ones that are connected with Flex Stores or Barstow and that have long doors and just to address, what accommodations are needed, for instance, the door was with an ask for accommodation.
Well, thank you. Does the members of the board have any last questions or concerns?
Thanks.
Yes, I have one thing I wanted to mention, and I didn't get a chance.
Can you speak up?
I'm so sorry.
I'm having a hard time.
We're competing. So.
And I'm soft-spoken, which is odd. But I being a Southern woman and having an Italian mother, I don't know how I became soft-spoken. I think the last time that Colin Christensen was here, there was a lot of questions around the transition. I would be more than happy to come at your next meeting and do a complete presentation on transition. It's sort of the hot topic right now. It's continually developing. We have next month, which I'm really excited to go to, the state transition forum that you guys have graciously invited me to. And then, of course, we have for DPR, we also have a transition form that's going to be made up of our transition consultants, our BRCs, our supervisors, our educators to really come and start talking about where are the needs being met, where what improvements we need to make. So hopefully I'll have some really good information from that and then present transition services that we have going on.
How about me?
You don't have to ask us
questions. The first Wednesday.
And I'll do it now.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming, explaining what WorkSource is doing, what DVR is doing. One of our major commitments is to employment for people with disabilities, whether or not it's intellectual or physical or whatever. And so I appreciate that very much. And we offer our services to you too as well, to be able to provide assistance to your specialists so that you can be as effective as possible. Okay. Well, we're moving directions, the item that we're working on right now is near and dear to my heart because it has to do with transportation. And what we are going to do is pick your brain, listen to your suggestions, and I'd like to introduce to you two people, Linda Dinkin with the Regional Transportation Council, and then Colleen Kuhn with the Human Services Council. We're taking the Human Services Transportation Plan outreach, listening sessions, if you will, so that we can hear what the needs of the community are. Can you explain just real quickly, Linda, what the whole purpose of the transition plan is?
Yeah, so there are some handouts. I don't know whether everybody got the handouts about what the Human Services Transportation Plan is all about. They're there if you haven't got copies. Some of the background information on the Human Services Transportation Plan, it addresses the transportation needs of the elderly, the young, people with disabilities, those with low income, and rural residents unable to provide their own transportation. And generally, the plan addresses the special transportation needs of those who cannot drive themselves. The plan itself is a federal and state requirement. It needs to be updated every 4 years. So this time around in 2018, we are doing an update. The plan was first developed back in 2007. We had an update published in 2011. The current plan was adopted in 2014, and 2018 is the update year. So that's why we're here today, because we want to get any feedback and input you might have that can be incorporated into the 2018 Human Services Transportation Plan update. Now, as I said, it's developed to meet both federal and state requirements. And every 2 years, we submit transportation funding grant requests to the Washington State DOT, and they have a pot of funded called the Consolidated Transportation Fund. It combines both federal and state funds together. So the plan we put together every 4 years goes towards supporting those grant applications and bringing transportation dollars to this region to help special needs transportation efforts. We are given a template, so we have to include certain information in the plan. It includes coordination with stakeholders, and that's why we're here this evening, because we want to coordinate and hear feedback from you. We have to address emergency management. For example, how would those with special transportation needs be evacuated during an emergency? We have to include and analyze data and information from sources such as the census, the American Community Survey, and the state's Office of Financial Management, and include maps to show general location and clusters of people with special transportation needs, showing where they might want to travel from and go to services they may need. We also need to identify unmet transportation needs and recommend strategies to meet these special transportation needs. And again, this is what we really want your feedback from, so we can put those sort of things into the plan. And also another requirement is to address technology and to consider how the technological improvements might help to improve transportation services for people with special needs. So RTC staff, people I work with, they're currently working on updating the demographic data. We have certainly learned over the last few years that our aging population is growing significantly in Clark County. Washington State as a whole is a fairly compelling place to retire to because of we don't have a state income tax. So retirees view it as a favorable place to retire to. We're also in the beginning the 2018 update to the Human Services Transportation Plan. We're documenting what existing services, transportation services are in place, and we're beginning to document the transportation challenges faced by special needs populations. So each biennium Washington State DOT solicits projects, so this plan is very important to tell the story of what happens in our region, and the region that I serve includes Clark, Clickett, and Skamania counties. So we document what needs we have, and then the Washington State DOT commits about $38 million a biennium for competitive statewide funding. It varies from biennium to biennium, but it's around $38 million. And then through this program, DOT distributes both the federal and state funding for rural public transportation as well as special needs transportation. And then we, working with the Accessible Transportation Coalition participants, and I know Mary has participated in those meetings, work closely with Walcolm and Colleen and other stakeholders in the community, we evaluate the project. What are the priority projects for the region? What projects should be submitted to the state DOT for competition? And some of those criteria we use, looking at whether or not the projects would address special needs deficiencies, would it provide a community benefit, what community connections could be made by the transportation projects that are competing for funds. We're looking for financial partnerships amongst the groups that work together, and also we want to support coordination between the stakeholders, the partners, and jurisdictions. In past efforts, a primary criterion used to evaluate the projects is the need to maintain existing services and not lose services that we have. and there's always more need than there are funds to fund those services. Again, this region, we've typically been successful in gaining between about 2.6 and 3.5 million in funding from the statewide competition. And some of the past projects have included funding to continue dial ride service for Klickitat Senior Services in Mount Adams, Transit out in Klickitat County, Skamania Senior Services, dial ride service and route deviated service to Fisher's Landing is funded through this program. The Human Services Council has a reserve a ride program. It primarily serves people with need to get to life-sustaining medical appointments, and they also have an employment transportation service to help people get to their jobs. The funds have also included funding for a Gorge Translate Mobility Management, which is administered by the Mid-Columbia Economic Development District out in the Gorge area, and also funds come for vehicle replacement for Skamania and Klickitat transit services. So there's also federal transit administration funds through the 5310 federal program comes directly to Clark County. CTRAN acts as a designated recipient for these funds, and it amounts to about $330,000 a year or so. And CTRAN has used these funds for its travel training program, the travel ambassador program, and it also works, CTRAN works with sub-recipients such as the Human Services Council that runs a mobility management program to help people get transportation or learn information about transportation services available, and also sub-recipients of Catholic Community Services that runs a volunteer driver program. And they're always trying to recruit new volunteer drivers to help with their program. And then also, Human Services Council has received some supplemental reserve a ride program funds from the FTA 5310 program. So if you need more information about the Human Services Transportation Plan, or you want to read what's in the 2014 version of the plan, they're all available on RTC's website, and I think one of the handouts has RTC's website address on it. And we've also got a special a sub-site under the Human Services Transportation Plan for the 2018 update. And on the right side of the screen, you will see a public comment box. So if you want to submit comments about the challenges or about the transportation needs and transportation services, you can always do that. And those comments will be passed to me, and I'll make sure they're incorporated in the 2018 plan update. So I think, Walt, with that, you're going to pose some questions.
You may have seen the handout that's been over there that has a list of questions, and then the reverse side of it is a shameless plug for a couple of more outreach events so we can talk to as many people as possible. What the list of questions are for tonight is just to stimulate a conversation with you all about what your experiences are, what your needs are, what the board's experience has been from their perspectives. And then if you look at the flyer portion, you'll notice that you have Linda's email address. And so if you're like me sometimes, if this is just dropped on you, it may be difficult to come up with something, or, yeah, that's perfect. One of the things that I know is that when I'm in the shower, I get that aha moment. I don't know about anybody else. You can submit as many ideas to Linda as you'd like, and so that's why we put that down as well.
So, listening to Linda, I wonder why you guys didn't get red double-decker buses. It would have really been cool here.
So with that, what I'd like to do is ask any individual in the room just to raise their hand. I'll call upon them. And we have Linda that's writing down suggestions and notes. And we can go from there. And the first question is, Yes, and it's also recorded. So if you wanted to go on the county website, you could listen to it as well, and maybe stimulate some other ideas. So with that, does anybody have any ideas, suggestions, concerns about how transportation affects the services that you use, the services that you provide?
You know, I see so many cars that have you know, they're accommodated to pick up wheelchairs and all kinds of, so many vans. I'm sure those people aren't using those 24 hours. Do you have some kind of an Uber, you know, like you have C-Van Uber or something like that? You get all the, get a name of all those guys and see if they want to be hired and take.
So the idea is more of an accessible, more accessible vehicles through.
Yeah, ask those people who, ask those people who have those cars, you know, kind of organize some kind of an Uber system with them.
Contracting their cars out.
Well, to give you perspective, last year I was in Tampa, St. Petersburg, and I went to a place that specializes in retrofitting and customizing vehicles for people with disabilities. And one of the individuals that I met, and they also customize wheelchairs, this individual does not have any legs or arms. He has short protrusions from his shoulders and just very short protrusions from his hips. And that gentleman had an amazing wheelchair that would lift up and down so that he could lower it down to the very bottom to the floor and then in turn walk to wherever he wanted to go to and come back in using puff and sip technology. He had a vehicle, it was a Dodge Caravan that had been retrofitted. This vehicle, he could drive. Again, he has no arms, he has no legs. Everything was done with SIP and PUF technology, and then some adapting. The reason why I share that with you was what his goal was, is to be an accessible Lyft, Uber driver in the St. Petersburg area. So there is, Uber has a program called Uber Access, but that could be something that, that needs to be further enhanced. Yes?
Well, I was just kind of thinking about what you were talking about. In Human Services Council,
you speak up, please.
Well, I know what I'm saying, so. So I call Human Services Council all the time and schedule rights for my clients because they need to get out of their buildings. And so it seems to me, and I could be wrong, my clients can use those places that are wheelchair, those Mercy One, those contracted drivers to Human Services Council. They can use all that for their medical transportation, but in order to use it for grocery shopping or picking up prescriptions, they can't get out of their pocket, and they can't afford that. So, and also, from what I understand, is that they're using medical transportation, they cannot get the bus pass to.
Right?
They can get one or the other.
I'm sorry, it's one or the other.
So. Are you referring to non-emergency medical transportation for Medicaid covered clients?
I thought all elderly were.
It's primarily for Medicaid, although we do have some dual eligible clients.
Okay.
And yes, we, as long as they're eligible, approved eligible from the state, we contract with about 20 different transportation companies throughout the Southwest Washington region to get them to their Medicaid covered medical appointments.
Just
Medicaid covered medical appointments. And that's exactly what we're talking about here is, that's great, but people also need to go to shopping trips. They might want to go to faith-based services. They might need to go to a nutrition site. They might need to go to a library.
get up their doctor's office.
Yes, yes, and there are really particular rules about when you can do that. So I guess that what I'm explaining is that's one of the needs that we're talking about, so that's important to hear. So Debbie, do you have that to the Human Services Transportation Plan?
Where I work, it's, you know, you can get to the doctor, sure, it's great. Then you have to wait 4 or 5 hours, I don't think that. But still, they can't get to the pharmacy if they're not.
So if I could paraphrase, that one of the gaps that your clients are experiencing is transportation that is not currently available for those that need to go to shopping, that need to go to pharmacy, that need to go to the non-covered areas for Medicaid transportation.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it was just
the Area Agency on Aging does provide some transportation services. But we're in session plans. So you guys do work with some of the Medicare clients, so through your transportation.
You guys contract with some companies as well for your senior transportation. And so the Medicare folks should be able to access that.
Should be without Medicaid.
Correct.
Okay. I'll look into that because I have one question.
Do you have a question?
Me?
Yeah, he's not paying attention, so I got you back.
These older unemployed people are saying, yes, please.
I talk with Children and Employment Services, so the gaps that I see for employment of people are that there's a window of time, and so sometimes people have to wait a long time. I mean, it's a half hour, I believe, but sometimes it could be an hour or more. And when people, well, there's a variety of things. So if somebody is waiting and it's door to door and they don't have any structure there, it's dangerous for some of them. It's also if somebody, say they are waiting to get in because the ride got them too early and the place that they're working hasn't actually opened yet, again, it's dangerous. If they're leaving the company is closing up and the ride isn't there, then they're waiting out and it's dangerous. So for us, it may be that we don't go for certain jobs or they don't actually get to work. So we're losing out on taxpayers and citizens and all the other ones that have to work. There's also demographics. So, geographically, there's areas in Clark County where they don't go, Colt area, Northern Battleground, Center. And so sometimes those people opt not to look for work because they just can't figure out transportation. And even when we try to find alternatives, sometimes they're overly expensive. We try to do a taxi or Now, those are two big areas to me. It's the window and the time waiting for drives, and then also not being able to actually get a ride. And I know they have the Ridgefield Connector, and that has some real specific times, so that's also a problem if somebody has a shortened day because of stamina or health issues or anything like that. So again, they can lose out on an opportunity to go to and then, those are my main things, but then I also talked to one of our customers who had a story that, a long paragraph, so I'd like to read it for him. His name's Jason Rockwood, and this actually deals with quite a few things, I think. He says, CBAM takes me from my home in Orchards to Shorty's, and then I have to walk up the road about a mile to my work at Pioneer Fleet. It takes me about 20 minutes, and a bus would only be like 5 minutes. I have to wear safety gear because the road is so busy and dangerous. People drive through there at 80 miles an hour. I face the cars as I walk, so I have some room to jump out of the way. I've had to jump out of the way many times. I also have to walk in the dark after work, and there's no light, and it's pitch black. There's a lot of gang activity through there, and I notice cars are pulling off the road. When I walk by, they may turn off their lights and the car, and I get a weird, creepy feeling. And then after I pass by, they start the car and lights up again. I have my flashlight and my phone out just in case. It's a creepy feeling. The
is also only 5 minutes up the road, and CDAM can't take me up the road, but I see them drive on the road all the time to get into Battleground. They drive by to get into Battleground. That said, it is not their service area, so they cannot pick me up. To me, it is a safety issue, and I know that I'm not the only person that is going through this problem.
Right. Yeah, and I'm very familiar with that as being the manager of CMAN.
Yeah.
And it is an issue of service boundaries. And, you know, that's the challenge. So the gaps that I see in, from that story
yeah.
is the fact that the service boundaries aren't large enough to meet everybody's needs.
In other counties that I've worked in, there have been like employer driver public transportation. Mm-hmm. Is that a consideration that our county has taken? Meaning like an employer, let's say, out in Ridgefield, they have, you know, there's a complex that basically they would have a C-van and one of them would have an employer driving out.
We have the van pool program, and that's associated with an employer relationship. One of the areas that we have talked about for years is the same basic concept of a community van pool that isn't necessarily directly associated with a business. But there's a van pool program that we operate and have for years and have medium and large size vans that provide some of that. So if there are people that need to get to a specific location, then they can together form a van pool and with that van pool cut their expenses. I mean, it's not for free, but it is a possibility. But that brings up the idea of the community van pool concept, which is, again, the reason why this is so important for me as a CTRAN administrator is that a lot of what is in the plan will either guide me or prevent me from doing some very creative ideas. And so if it isn't spelled out in the transportation plan, I can't use the $5310 or the $5317 federal dollars because it's not called out by Washington State and the community. So that's why it's important to record that. Yes, please.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to let folks know we do have an employment transportation program that we operate out of our organization. So if you're interested in learning more about that, you can drop your business card, I'll give you mine. We can provide door-to-door services through that program, as well as we work with CTRAN to provide some other services.
Would that be an option? Or
it's very possible.
When these young
yeah.
man?
Yeah.
Long-term or short-term?
Well, we work with a group of community employers who really help frame the needs and how we should operate the program. Typically, it's a six-month period until people, you know, maybe have enough time and get some financial support under their belt, or at least get out and are looking for work. However, if there's a longer-term need, we have funding that can help with that as well. In fact, we just started working with another supported employment organization locally.
One of the programs that we sponsor is the mobility management. Bill Bauman is the mobility manager, and those are some of the things that Bill will work for and try to, you know, advocate for. And see you later. Probably have a bus to catch. Good idea. So that's another avenue that you can go with. Yes, Liz?
I actually wanted to know a little bit more about the van pool services that you were mentioning. Some from employers overload for employment. And I just wanted to kind of see what kind of future of our employment services are. Basically, like over at ELNA, we have a number of individuals who are working there. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of their schedules are like in the evening, graveyard shifts even. And we're having a really hard time with gaining transportation for them because, one, we're out of bounds. And then, two, also just the funding for them individually.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, let me give you my contact information. The woman that actually manages the VanPool program is a woman by the name of Cindy Quinacqua, and I don't have her phone number memorized and her email address. But if you send me an email or call me, then I'll put the two of you together. She knows the rules and regulations that have to be applied to any type of VanPool, but she's constantly looking for more VanPool opportunities. My number is area code 360-906-7305, and my email address is waltg@c-tran.org. But I could work with you in getting you connected with the expert that knows that program. I'm not sure if the arrangement could be made, but we're always looking for more opportunities.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I'm going to be on the Halifax Tribe Transportation. That's actually one of the things that we're working on, is the transportation issues for the employment of the camp. So. I will try to be here now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
We also have Seamus from Watch Dog.
The animal guru.
That's probably the person you should talk to. So I'd sell you on anything, and then Cindy would have to try to keep me out of jail.
So I was just going to say that the, and it's not the paratransit, but the regular buses, big buses, fixed route. It's also the time that because many of the fixed routes don't run mm-hmm. as late.
The span of service
mm-hmm. is limiting my son's social activity and increasing the visits to my home. So.
So it's a mental health issue. Your mental health. No, Spanish service is important.
It is.
That's a valid point. I mean, we have all the teenagers, not that they should be out doing some of the things they're doing, but, you know, I live in the center, growth and battleground. The service is terrible, and you've got people who are just clamoring to move to Vancouver just so they can participate. And, there's just not room for all those people there. But, you know, the other thing, too, is like we're coming up in a society or a population who are not wanting to drive cars.
Right.
You know, they're wanting to access more of the transportation for reasons of saving money, saving the environment. I'm looking at my daughter who just is constantly at me because I have a job or I have to drive around. And, you know, she's just not wanting to drive, and she lives in Vancouver, and she can't. In order for her to go to Portland to work, she's adding like 3.5 to 4 hours to her work day just to get to downtown and back. And I don't know what people here in Vancouver are doing. I know that I had a client who tried to take a bus from campus to Barrie Agency in the evening, and it took him 3 hours to get with a bike. Took him 3 hours to get from
here. Oh, that was the problem. Was it mine?
He had a bike. He put it on the bus. Okay, so, you know, and it took a long time for him to get to mm-hmm. our agency from campus. But, you know, that span has always been kind of hard, and as you grow, you've got to think about accommodating more of that population.
Good.
And I love the Vine.
Good.
God is great. I wish that were like
everywhere.
Yeah. Right. California bus systems where you can just.
Well, we are in the beginning phase of development of bus rapid transit along the Mill Plain Corridor. So, but it's going to take a few years. But that is something that's the long-range future for Centria. But looking at, again, what our community's needs are there other things that are a concern, a gap, a suggestion, even what is working well?
I have what's working well. I just have to say the paratransit drivers are amazing. They really are. I don't give praise readily for no reason, and I have been incredibly impressed.
Thank you. I'll make sure to pass that along. I know it always starts at the top. No, I think you have despite some pretty difficult, challenges. Thank you very much.
I want to say I love the transit train.
Good.
That's amazing for all clients. I mean, regardless of your need.
I like the 5 minute call.
Yeah.
To let your 5 minutes out so that somebody can clock out if they're working up until then.
I will say, I have GPS on my children, and not all drivers drive the same speed. It's really shocking how fast you can get going Portland sometimes.
If that takes place, and I'm being very serious about that, is that please call us at 695-0123, say you have a customer comment, and raise that concern. I can then pull the video of the trip that will give me the speed in which the individual is traveling.
Okay. That number of your lights.
Yes, of course. Any safety related issue we take very seriously.
What was the number again, Walt?
That's the customer service number.
The customer service number, what was it?
360-695-0123. And that's available 7 days a week. The CDN number is 695-8918. That's primarily for reservations, and that's available 8 to 5 every day of the week. But what are there other things that come to mind as I'm looking with guilt at the board, wondering what suggestions they may have as advocates for people with disabilities? I'm working on it.
Well, I would say that recreation and leisure piece is so important, and that has to do with ability to get to it from where they're located, and also timing, because if you have a job, I mean, typically people like to go out in the evening, they can get there, they just can't get home.
True. That goes to the span of services.
Yeah, but it is important to be able to have another reason to get out of the house that's for fun and for enjoyment.
It's very important.
I don't know if it's still this way, but I recall some years back that there's the 3/4 of a mile requirement that paratransit be offered within 3/4 of a mile. But it was my understanding that CTRAN had made the decision to kind of have more than that for certain areas just so that people didn't get isolated or create islands and things like that. I think that that's something that is working and that is helpful. Whatever, maintaining the current area of CVAN services, even if it's beyond the 3/4 of a mile, I think is really important for people.
Okay.
I think that the alternative to the large buses that I've seen, even pulling up here, they're like minivans, and then there's the CVAN size ones, but then there's SUVs. There's just all sorts of vehicles, and that's probably a good thing and probably saves you money.
Okay. Yeah, it does to a certain extent, but the important thing to remember is that the most expensive singular item is the cost of labor. And you can have a person making X number of dollars here driving a 40-foot bus, And so your obligation would be their wage plus whatever the bus costs, which isn't that much different. And they could have a smaller vehicle and it would be almost virtually the same. What makes it different is the fuel efficiency, for example, and the capacity. There's nothing worse than getting a full bus and you're waiting for the bus and all of a sudden, oh, I can't get on board because it's full. But,
I know this is something that's going to be in the future, but is it something that C-Tran is looking at is self-driving functions?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think that is something that is probably going to happen in the future. I know
Cadillac has just come out with a self-driving car. Yeah. They did? Yes. Yeah.
It's
the new 2019.
Michigan State or both have a shuttle on campus that uses an autonomous vehicle. Mm-hmm. And then I just heard today in state of California, I think it was, that delivery trucks have been doing it for a while. They haven't told anybody that they've been doing it. And you haven't seen people, a lot of people leaving the state of California.
What's that, how did you get something out of the truck? Yeah, how do they get the package to the door?
Well, because the delivery person isn't driving. They're doing something else, maybe paperwork or something like that. I imagine they're still in there so that if there was a malfunction.
Or an accident.
And that's always been Uber's business plan from the get-go. Was to driverless vehicles.
The state of Oregon has been planning this for a long time. Now, I-84, they actually had embedded within the highway a way to be able to have self-driving cars, and then we went to GPS, so they changed that. So this has been something that worked for many years.
Is C-Tran still planning, I don't know if I should call it a venture, with the Columbia River crossing?
No,
is that gone?
So that would be helpful, is if we had a way to better connect paratransit, and I'm sure part of that's probably my own ignorance, but
with TriNet
okay. Paratransit, right? Okay. So if we could figure that out as far as how do we, for individuals that use paratransit, how do we get them to where they need to go over there, okay. i.e. paying for their services?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
One thing that I do want to say is the whole thing with the Vine, with you guys starting the Vine at 37. The Mill Plain is fairly congested anyways, because I ride that route every day. I live off that route. I go to and from connecting buses to Fisher's Landing, wherever. With the Vine getting started, how is it going to lessen with the construction already the mass congestion that's already on Mill Plain with the cars?
Well, I can't really give you very many details because they're being developed. One of the things that I'm proud about C-Tran is the fact that we believe in community involvement. The design of the Vine and the fact that it intermixed with regular traffic wasn't what I originally thought the bus rapid transit would do. I thought it would have its own dedicated line going down the center of the street like you see in a lot of places. But the community said, you know, that's not safe. We don't feel good about somebody being dropped off in the middle of the road and then crossing either to their left or to their right to get to the sidewalk that they wanted to use. And so we decided to go with their input. That, I mean, that's, you know, what it actually is going to look like as far as the Mill Plain BRT, I don't know.
I also think that the piece that you've done on 14, where you have the buses on the shoulder,
yes.
That I think is really helpful because going east at the end of the day is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helps roof and lawn.
So they're driving on that piece?
There's a certain part where they can drive to shoulder.
Yeah, so they're the ones that they're going from.
And they have
freeway to 160.
Yeah, they're, when they leave the Fisher's Landing Transit Center, and if it's, there's certain requirements, the traffic has to be slowed down to, I think it's less than 15 miles an hour, then they can go on that for a period until they hit the I-205, then they're back in the lane. Well, let me, because I don't want to be, yes, please.
So I was just thinking, has Steven ever thought of a contractor program?
What do you mean by a contractor?
Well, because you keep saying about the labor, and I remember from last year about the prices of the passes and everything was an issue. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if having a contract program would be lowering that amount of money. Because we only have one car for that one business. So I work at SEH now.
Yes.
And I have a number of people who are working there, like 32.
Okay.
Most of them, well, I shouldn't say most of them. I'll say half of them use C-VAN or C-TRAN. And so I was wondering with that conjunction, is bringing with the ALNA, you know, like if there was one
and signing a CDN purely for that business,
like just for that business, okay. Because I feel like that really is the future of where we're going. This trade is going higher, and also it's one campus, it's not a whole bunch of places within the community, and it also has more opportunities so far.
And that's what I was referring to with the other county, well, in particular, Kitsap County. I know they have the current money, the third, on Puget Sound. But there are a lot of businesses that have their own dedicated, with an employee driver, but it is Kitsap access.
Right, yeah.
Bus.
They with the shipyards and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right. Isn't that the van?
Yeah, this is a van pool program that they run.
But they have a dedicated van to their business.
Right.
It's parked in there, it doesn't go back.
Are you referring them to accessible vehicles that can take wheelchairs? So the van pools don't work to
We have had an individual that has a disability wanted to be part of a van pool, we would have to purchase a vehicle that would allow equal access. Isn't that true, Seamus?
You have to have a vehicle available. You don't have to have that on your own. In the previous, like, we'd be like, well, I'm not going to have any trouble with CJ. They're doing a great job. In my previous life, back in Illinois, I had a patient, and well, I'm 65 now. In my younger days, I did start a vehicle program, and we did have a program, but also we had a payment program. I'm going to call you today and talk more about it, Paul, for persons with disabilities. When ADA switched from 504 way back into an ADA program, we transitioned our buses. We had some corridors, unfortunately, where there were a lot of individuals with disabilities that were 3/4 of a mile away, and they were on waiting lists because half the service we only had an open door, and half would be subscribed because you couldn't turn anybody down. They came to board me, it's pretty upset. So my board was like, Shane was working with the vehicle program. Well, let me think about it. So I actually put that program where I gave vehicles to agencies that serve persons with disabilities. And they provided a driver, they were trained like a normal vehicle driver, and they actually took people to work, job training, to school, learned different skills. And the carrot was that if you use a vehicle on evenings and weekends, take your plans, parents, carry, you know, whatever, to social place. So it was a win-win for us as a transit agency.
Was that at Tri-Cities?
No, this was in the RPA case. That was in the 90s. So it's possible. It's a business decision, and it got to develop a whole program. And C-TRAN is always amenable to try different things, so maybe something they need to do.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying you should do it. There's things you can do. The employer program is the same thing. When the Clean Air Act came around in the 90s, that was another thing. Employers didn't want to get into the transportation business because they must sell their wares. But they're going to have an enormous number of SOVs, meaning single occupied vehicles, on their site by 50%. And we offered a program that we gave to employers, gave them a van, a driver, and a and they can take their info between our sites or other types of work-related activities. It just can be used for a library service or computer. So there's a lot of options out there.
Well, if I could, I need to wrap this up because of the group that's right behind us needs the room. This particular handout that you have, which are just questions, stimulate ideas, please feel free to email Linda and share those ideas and suggestions. And in turn, if you know of anybody else that would like to participate in these kind of open houses, the next one we have will be on March 20th at the Clark County Public Service Building, the sixth floor hearing room. And then the one after that will be on the 22nd at the Fisher's Landing Transit Center. It's all listed right here for you. Please invite any and all people that have things that they want to share. Does the board have anything for the good of the order? Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your contributions. I've got money contributions.